I believe in my powers.
I believe in my powers.
I believe in the powers of my teammates.
I believe in the power of my teammates.
I trust in my powers.
I trust in my powers.
I trust in the powers of my teammates.
I trust in the powers of my teammates.
Somebody get this big walking carpet out of my way.
Look, okay, just get any blunt objects together, all right? Get cornered, bash them in the head. That seems to work out.
I mean, what are we, a team? No. We're a chemical mixture that makes chaos.
Gentlemen, I'm Agent Carter. I supervise all operations for this division.
The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
And
angels are love!
Welcome to the Skiffing and Fanny Show.
The challenges of being half-Vulcan pod person from Alderaan with Scott Pearson.
I'm Sean.
I'm Paul.
And obviously we're here with Scott Pearson, who is, of course, from a special podcast we may have interviewed you about before.
Indeed, Generations Geek, which I do with my daughter.
Who is hidden? Is she hiding here somewhere?
She is here with a group, you know, with her squad, and they are who knows where. She's cosplaying as Sansa from Game of Thrones all weekend.
Okay.
So she's been having lots of fun seeing all the other Games of Thrones characters, and they yell out her name, and one guy was cosplaying as her character's father, so they had fun. So, yeah, she's having a blast.
Wonderful. So I wanted to bring you on today because last time we kind of talked, it was the father-daughter kind of perspective, mm-hmm. talking about podcasting and that kind of thing. And we talked a little bit about your obsession, we will say, with certain fandoms, Star Trek being probably the biggest one, I think.
That's the primary one.
I would say that is the biggest one, yeah. And I actually want to talk about a little bit more about getting into your history, how mm-hmm. you became a fan. So I want to talk about that. That's a big question. When were your first experiences with becoming a kind of sci-fi fan?
It was with Star Trek in the early 1970s when it was in syndication. And it was where I grew up out in the country where there was very little to do. That was on TV in the afternoon, so when I would get home from school, I would rush to my grandma's where I went after school while my parents were at work, and I would watch Star Trek reruns on my grandma's black and white television set. And so I was one of those people that like didn't realize for a while that Star Trek actually was in color, because it just, you know, I wasn't in a place with a color TV when at the time it was on. And for whatever reason, Star Trek set the sci-fi hook in me really quick, really deep. And from there, I branched out into, reading Asimov, Bradbury, and mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And it's been ever since, you know.
Well, where has your media fandom gone beyond Star Trek?
Oh, wow. Well, the other great thing is that in times when Star Trek wasn't in syndication, one of the local TV stations had the classic, matinee movie kind of thing. There'd be old movie playing around that same time when I'd get home from school. It wasn't always sci-fi, but often it would be stuff like This Island Earth or War of the Worlds, the classic 53 version.
Sure.
And so I started seeing all those old classic sci-fi movies, Ray Harryhausen and that kind of stuff.
Okay, so you went into media, you went into books. So how did you get into being such a fan that you decided to branch out into fandom, and especially in the form of a podcast and going to conventions? Where'd that come from?
Well, it took me a long time to get into going to conventions, because I was growing up in northern Minnesota in the 70s, and there were not conventions up there. I knew they existed through reading magazines and, you know, getting some of the books about Star Trek Lives was a book that talked about the convention movement and how it tied in with Star Trek fans. And soon I knew that there were these marvelous things called conventions. But, you know, I'm kind of an introvert, kind of a, you know, claustrophobe, you know, and so I didn't necessarily rush out and embrace that part of fandom because it's kind of overwhelming for me. But I did start going to a convention here and there.
What was it first?
I came down to the Twin Cities. While I was still living in northern Minnesota, I made a trip down to the Twin Cities because there was a Creation Con that both Shatner and Nimoy were appearing at. And this was in the late 80s or early 90s. And so I couldn't resist that. I had to go see the Shat and Nimoy. And so I enjoyed it, but, you know, I didn't really rush to get back to another convention. But the turning point for me was then when I started getting published as a Star Trek writer. I got invited to be a writer guest at Shore Leave, which is a big con outside of Baltimore. And so I started going to that year after year after year. And then at that point, I realized, why am I only going to one con a year that I have to fly out to when there's all these great cons right here in the Twin Cities where by then I lived? And so then I started looking into Convergence and MarsCon, and I still go to cons very little compared to being a lifelong huge geek, but...
So how many a year do you go to?
Really, only a couple. Like for the last few years, I've only gone to Convergence and Shore Leave. And they're often just within a couple of weeks of each other. So it's like this crazy madness, you know, it's like...
It's a rock walk.
Yeah, and so, you know, I'm here 4th of July weekend at Convergence, and then I have next weekend off, and then July 15th, flying out to Baltimore with my daughter.
For Shore Leave.
And then I will get to rest for the rest of the summer. But my daughter will be going to the big Supernatural Con here in the Twin Cities.
She's a Supernatural fan.
Yeah, she's a huge Supernatural fan.
Yeah,
she's got this great thing. She got a reproduction, a license plate that matches one of the license plates on the cars that the brothers drive. And, you know, so she's been gathering autographs from all the actors and from the show on that license plate.
That's great. Fantastic.
Yeah, that's
wonderful.
That's a true fandom, though.
Yeah.
That is. So one thing I wanted to ask is, you know, you have been a fan for so long.
Decades.
Right? In a good way. I mean, that's in a really wonderful way.
An old, decrepit man way.
But because you've been a fan for, you know, you've seen so much in fandom, and one of the things I always wonder is for those of you, those fans who've been in this fandom for so long, I mean, how has it affected your life, especially as fandoms developed and in a weird way, you've watched it actually become this massive thing.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, in these last few years, we've seen... the geeks inherit the earth, kind of, you know, with the Marvel films and everything. It's like you can't even, you know, I think back, you know, when I was a kid, because of my age and because of where I was living, you know, we didn't have cable. You know, where my mom still lives in the house I grew up in, she still doesn't have cable. Cable doesn't go all the way out that far in the country.
Wow.
She could get a satellite dish, but she's not that interested in it. But so when I was growing up, there was so little access to these things. And I subscribed to magazines like Starlog and Fangoria and stuff like that. And so I was, you know, that's how I got my exposure to what movies were out there. And there also wasn't a lot of theaters around, so these movies didn't even come close to me sometimes. And then you flash forward now, and my daughter walks around the house watching Star Trek, you know, streaming to her iPad. You know, it is this, you know, between the technology and then just the... broader commercial success that genre films have had over the last few years, it is just stunning to just see everyone loving these films.
So do you think of or do you look at any of the negative aspects of fandom going wide and inheriting the earth, and how do you feel about that?
I try to avoid that. I mean, it's a very common reaction when you're in your little tribe that loves something, and then all of a sudden there are all these new people. There is this kind of gut reaction to, like, well, who are these people? But I really dislike the idea of gatekeeping, you know, who's a true fan and who's not. And, you know, I've seen that a lot in the Star Trek universe, because the new films have been kind of divisive to some of the older fans. And so you see people questioning, well, yeah, you know, if you're a fan of the Abrams films, you know, you're not a true Trek fan. And I don't like that at all. It's like, we all love this genre for various reasons, and I think we should just try to come together on that, and it's okay if we don't all like the same films, you know?
So do you like the J.J. Abrams films?
I enjoyed the first one. I thought it was a nice ride, even though I thought that the script really didn't make sense, that there were story points and plot holes that you could fly that ridiculously oversized Enterprise through. the second one didn't really work for me. It was too grim. I didn't like the way they tried to play off elements from Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
Didn't work for me. But I am excited to see the third one.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you.
Yeah, because it's scripted by Simon Pegg, and I have a lot of faith in Simon Pegg as a screenwriter. I mean, his Cornetto trilogy, I love, and I think he knows how to carry a character arc through a script that is different from some of the stuff we've seen in other J.J. Abrams' work, which is more set-piece focused. So I'm hoping that he'll be able to find that balance of action-adventure and those character moments. One thing I do not mind, and a lot of Star Trek fans do, it doesn't really bother me if Star Trek on the big screen are big, explodey action movies. A lot of people get really upset about that because they talk about, well, Star Trek is supposed to be more intellectual and stuff like that. And certainly some of the episodes have been very, you know, full of social commentary and that sort of thing.
Sure.
But then even when you look at the original cast movies, once they started leaping to the big screen, it was already shifting toward action-adventure and a big bad villain and
and it can be argued that the first Star Trek movie, which didn't work so well because it wasn't that big explodey, it was almost too character-focused for its own good. How do you feel about how do you feel about Star Trek The Motion Picture?
I like Star Trek The Motion Picture. It certainly has its flaws. I think that its direction of it was really antiseptic in a way that just...
Clinical.
It's bizarre. But, you know... One thing that has always bothered me about it is one of the most pivotal moments in the entire life of one of the primary characters, Spock, happens in that film, and it just kind of gets buried in the grayness of that movie.
Oh yeah, at the beginning,
because his what happens between him and V'ger, when we get to that scene where he clasps Kirk's hands and says, "This simple feeling is beyond V'ger's comprehension," it's like that is a huge moment in this character's life. And sometimes it seems like people don't even realize that it happened.
Make use of that point. The character moments, you talk about character moments and character arcs, get lost in the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, my favorite's still Voyage Home. Not because I think it's actually the best of them, but because that's the one my grandma showed me. Because she loved Star Trek. She really, really loved it because she loved the social commentary. And when she watched films, that's what she always wanted. Like, it didn't matter if it was fun or if it was action-packed. Right, what she wanted was that there was a good story. And she always loved the Voyage Home because she loved the comic elements of it, because there's Spock running around in this white bathrobe.
It's fun, and it actually does have a message to it as well. But you really get to see those characters and those actors enjoying themselves being those characters.
Yeah.
Then they made Star Trek V, which I cut school for with my friends. And we regretted it going out of the field. Like, why
did we hate that one?
We'd rather have gone to class instead.
Yeah, there's some enjoyable character moments in it here and there, but it obviously had story problems all through that.
That was the Shatner one, right? That he directed.
Yes.
I feel like when you think about the original Star Trek movies, a lot of them are very flawed. They got big issues. Some of them have pacing issues, some of them have story issues, but when I think about them, none of them to me seem like terrible films. Like, the originals. I'm thinking the originals. I feel like when we get to some of the later stuff, like, say, Nemesis.
No, don't say it.
Don't say the word.
Film Who Shall Not Be Named. Right, but I think about the original films, and I think, you know, the messages that are in here and the interesting ideas, these are not total failures. Even though I agree that five is probably, I would say, is the weakest of all of them.
I think it's the weakest of the original cast, easily.
Okay, so switching tracks, you know, we've talked a lot about Star Trek. Obviously, that's your big wheelhouse. But there's got to be new stuff you're into, new things that you've come to since Star Trek that have been really influential that you've loved.
New discoveries.
New discoveries,
I am loving the Marvel Cinematic Universe. The movies, Jessica Jones, oh my gosh, I can't even describe how much I love that show. And Daredevil I enjoyed, and, you know, I think they're being very smart about how they balance some of the tones that they do. Some movies like Ant-Man that are more humorous and others that are more dark, but even the ones that are more dark still have light elements in it. They're doing a great job, and So that's something I watch all the time. I'm also enjoying the group of TV series, from the Berlantiverse or whatever they're calling it. So you've got Arrow and Flash and Supergirl. I'm loving those things. Seems to me I'm missing one there. Is there another one?
Legends of Tomorrow?
Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Which I think is the sort of... That one's kind of a scattershot mess right now, but I'm still liking it. You know, it's like I watch an episode and I say, that was fun, but it didn't make any sense whatsoever. and how the time travel actually works, I don't think any of the writers have any, like, solid... time sure. travel theory behind how it works. It's just all over the place. Things change, they don't change, they just... But it's just it's a ride. It's a roller coaster ride, and I've been liking it, man.
Alright, so yeah, so, okay, so the Marvel Universe, the DC Universe, what else?
The DC Universe, I should specify, on television.
Okay.
DC on film, I think they are having a little trouble finding their way, but...
That's very kind of
That's
you,
a so. Kind way to say that.
Well, you know, I think they clearly made a decision that Marvel is sort of the happy-go-lucky film universe. Let's be the grim, dark, gritty universe. And it just hasn't come together for them. And I love a lot of stuff that's really dark and gritty and depressing, but they just haven't... Well, and I don't think that's a good marriage with Superman specifically. I mean, he's supposed to be the... You know,
yeah, true justice in the American way, not grim, dark, unhappy.
Yeah, and so it you know, not to say I'm sure that somewhere out there someone could write a really dark Superman story that would work for me, but I don't think they've found
they
their
haven't
way.
Reached it.
No,
I know when we were talking last night, one of the things that you and I both shared a deep, unabiding love for was Battlestar Galactica.
The reboot.
Yep. The reboot, yep.
Did you watch the original?
I, as a young, you know, so I was, you know, I don't know, 14 when Battlestar Galactica came on. And so I watched it, and I remember that I really enjoyed it. I think I, even at that age, had some problems with the little dog thing.
Oh, Foxy, the dog, yes.
You know.
But, you know, I religiously watched both Battlestar Galactica and Buck Rogers.
Rogers in the 25th century.
With the annoying robot voiced by Mel Blanc. But
beady, beady, beady. Hello,
yeah.
Sean.
Oh, my God. But but then, you know, flashing forward after, you know, I sort of retroactively realized that both of those shows had some real problems. But I was curious about the remake. I wasn't curious enough about the remake to watch it when it was being broadcast, but then I was hearing more and more stuff about it, and so then I started binging on it a few years later and really, for the most part, enjoyed it immensely.
It's seriously, the grimdark that works.
And it was, yeah, that was grimdark that works, that tackled contemporary issues and had a lot of great characters and great performances and, you know, kept things shifting around, so you really didn't know what was happening. And for the most part, they were able to, you know, keep control of that, not knowing what's happening. As they built up to the finale, I think they kind of lost control of it a little bit, but I don't blame them. I blame the source material, because, come on, the idea of... We're out in some distant place in some future time, but somehow they're all wearing Egyptian helmets and have things named. I mean, that bit of the mythos of Battlestar Galactica really doesn't make any sense, and I don't think there's any way that you can make it make sense.
That's
and
fair.
They took a noble shot at it by bringing in this concept of repeating motifs, you know, how this story repeats and repeats. That was a good try, but I was kind of like, I still don't really get what they're doing there. But overall, it was fun. It was great. It was
that ties me into a question we circled around before, but now we're going and look at it a different way. Because one of the reasons why fandom and geek culture has kind of spread over the earth, as it were, is because there's so much good stuff out there. I mean, mm-hmm. You have Marvel, you have DC movies for some people. You have the DC shows. You have Battlestar Galactica. You have all this stuff. Back in, say, the early 1980s, we watched about Buck Rogers because that's all we had.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about this explosion of goodness, and how do you manage to make your way in a world where there is too much of a good thing?
In
almost.
A world where there's too much of
a good thing. Sorry, in a world.
Well, for one thing, I don't even try to keep up with everything, you know. But yeah, sometimes, as an older fan, you find yourself in a state of disbelief that there's this wealth of stuff out there. And you start doing that, like, cranky old man thing. It's like, when I was little, you know.
We had Buck Rogers and we liked Tweaky. Yeah. No, we didn't, but we did.
So I think, I think it's great. It's great fun to see this genre that I've loved my whole life really start to get some respect in many ways and just see the broader success. And I think in some ways it's the technology. The fact that the alternate ways that there are to deliver shows to the audience has opened up so much more possibilities for shows that wouldn't be able to make it in a more traditional network situation. And then you just have the computer technology that allows the people to make effects that are really surprisingly high quality on a relatively low budget. Has also allowed a lot more shows, I think, to succeed. You know, in the old days, people would have tried making those shows anyway, but they would have had cheap effects that lots of times the real fans will have are willing to cut some slack. But to get that broader audience, they're not necessarily willing to, you know, look at the cheap rubber suit and take it seriously.
Yeah. I'm thinking of early Doctor Who episodes, like, say, the Ark in Space, which is the fourth Doctor episode, where they go to a space station, and they have some outside shots of the space station, and it kind of looks like a crappy gyroscope spinning. It is horribly... Yeah. And then you go just 20 years to Deep Space Nine and Babylon 5, and even those are not as cool as, say, what we can see in The Expanse now. We can really see the vision of science fiction in ways that we only can only use our imagination for with the days of the cheap suit.
And so that you just see this explosion of all this stuff happening, and it's fun.
So we know that Generation Geek, if you want to find a family friendly podcast where father and a daughter talk geeky stuff, including Star Trek and all kinds of other fun and exciting topics.
Yep, just, you know, generationsgeek.com, look us up. We're now calling ourselves more or less family friendly, because when I started, my daughter was 15, now she's 18, and so we are starting to watch, you know, more adult fare and talk about stuff that's a little bit more adult, but we still really try to keep the show, you know, PG 13 at most. You know, even if we're discussing stuff that's R-rated, or, you know, the discussion stays at a level that you shouldn't find yourself feeling awkward listening to it with your younger fan. And if things are going to get a little dicey, we say.
But what other stuff are you working on that you'd like to maybe let folks know about?
I have a number of projects I'm just working on spec. I don't have anything currently planned to be coming out. So I'm working on some indie publishing. I've been putting out some Kindle singles, where short stories of mine, either that have been anthologized in the past and are now out of print, or stories that have not been in print at all, I'm making those available through Kindle. And eventually, when I get the time, I'll be releasing those on other e-reader platforms. I just haven't gotten to that yet. I've got a current novel in progress I'm working on that who knows when that will ever be finished. But so you can always just go to my website, yeahsure.net, yeahsure.net, and find everything about it. There's links back to that site from the generationsgeek.com website as well. And so you can always see what I'm up to on my site, what I'm reading, what I'm writing, what I'm editing. You know, I'm a freelance editor, and lately I've been copy editing a significant portion of the Star Trek print novel line from Simon and Schuster.
Nice.
And so that's been lots of fun. And, you know, I know lots of those writers, and it's just great to be contributing to that franchise, bringing it back to the beginning.
Thank you so much, Scott, to come on and talk about everything.
Yes, thank you.
And on that note, awkward ending and scene.
Stay frosted.
Our intro and outro music comes from Nocturnia by Psychedelic Pedestrian. You can find out more about them on freemusicarchive.org, including the full version of the song. We obviously made some edits to the song, including sound effects and, of course, shortening the length. You can also support us by going to patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. If you'd like to send us a suggestion, you can do so at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com. You can also go to our website, skiffyandfanty.com, and check out the little suggested topic form at the top there. You can also just send us emails. You can also find us on Twitter at skiffyandfanty or on Facebook at The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Just search for us on there. Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you next time.